You should be the host here.
I'm really laughing at you.
We're both Munster people, diehard Munster people, and we want them to do well.
The Red 78 with Alan Quinlan and Niamh Briggs. Nobody knows Munster rugby better.
I'd like to think I know a lot. Okay, welcome along to episode 5 of the Red 78, the only podcast you'll ever need for everything Munster right here on the Rugby Channel. I'm Alan Quinlan, and joining me as usual is legend of Munster rugby, Niamh Briggs. How are you, Niamh?
Hi, Quinny. How are you doing?
Very good. Looking forward to doing this podcast with two special guests. So for everything Munster rugby, this is the place to be. We're always looking for your feedback, your thoughts on what's happening in Munster. The best way to get in touch is to tweet us at Rugby Channel 15 or leave a comment wherever you're watching this across the Rugby Channel's social media pages. And of course, please subscribe to the podcast. Just search the Red 78 and you get the podcast straight to your phone every week. Now, we've something a little bit different for you this week. We're parking the analysis and match reviews. We will touch a little bit of rugby on the end. But for the moment, there's something very special happening in the Aviva Stadium next Saturday in the game between Ireland and New Zealand. To talk about that, and of course, to talk about Anthony Foley and his passing. He's my former teammate and friend. 5 years ago, he passed away tragically, and that was a couple of weeks ago. His anniversary was marked at that Munster Connacht game. But as I said, there's something special happening this weekend in the Aviva, and there's a launch of a song written and going to be performed by my former teammate and Axel's former teammate as well, Barry Murphy. So Barry, thanks for joining us. It's great to have you on. How are
you? Thanks, Billy. I'm great. Thanks, man. Long time listener, first time caller. Thanks for having me on. I love listening to you every week. And I'm honored to come on and talk about, as you said, a friend and teammate, Axel, who we've written a song for. And Orla, his wonderful sister, has gone above and beyond and managed to get the RFU to dedicate a bit of time to him on Saturday and put out a video and the song, and put a huge feature in the match day program to promote the song, which has been released for three charities that Orla has a huge connection with, and that Anthony has a connection with. So look, we're trying to raise money for in his memory and for a really good cause. So it's a massively positive thing, and we're just delighted to be involved in such a big occasion, Ireland versus the All Blacks on Saturday.
Yeah, it's lovely. And we'll get into that in a minute. And you mentioned Orla. Orla is joining us as well. Thank you so much, Orla, Anthony's sister. You've done a lot of things in the last couple of years to kind of remember Anthony, but also to raise great money for brilliant charities, Orla. So you have to be commended on that. And I must say, personally, the strength that you've shown, and I'm not surprised, because I know you a long time and I know all the family and Olive and the boys as well. You've been through an horrendous time, something that's unimaginable. But these kind of things kind of put a smile on your faces and give you a lift, I would imagine.
Absolutely. First, let me say thanks for having me on. It's a great honour. Two players I greatly admired. Actually, three. Sorry, Barry, you're included too. So yeah, it's an absolute honour to be here and to be able to speak about something positive out of something so, as I call it, the saddest thing I've ever known is when Anthony died. And I'm sure you all actually know the feeling, unfortunately. And it's great that a lot of good light has come from his passing, and this is like the brightest star shooting out of it. It's just been amazing. And I had my own journey last year. I cycled over 3,000 kilometres of the Wild Atlantic Way in memory of Anthony. I called it Orla's Wild Ways. The three charities that are chosen for the Alone You Stand song is actually the same charities for that. And they're wonderful. And it's great. I've raised over 10,000 euros for them already. And as of 9 o'clock this morning, after one day live, Barry's song was at 3,500 euros at 9 a.m. this morning.
Wow. So, and that's what we want to do here, Orla. Obviously, we want to remember Anthony and recount some nice stories. But as you say, it's unimaginable what's happened and what did happen. But how much inspiration do you and all of the family, because you know, I've spoken to all of you at different stages, get from the support that people have given you and the real nice way that Anthony was remembered for what he achieved in the game. How much of a lift does it give all the family? And does obviously that inspired you to go and launch Orla's Wild Ways and go on that journey? And tell us a little bit about people you encountered and just how it made you feel and the family feel about doing that.
People have been just so inspirational on the whole journey, from the very sad week of Anthony's funeral, where you all came in and you all helped us, and the wave of support really carried us through that really difficult week. And then to start my Wild Ways journey, everyone I mentioned to it came on board and helped. Your own very Conor O'Brien has been amazing. He's done the logo for my own Wild Ways, and Barry's artwork is just, every time you knock on a door and you mention you're doing something in memory of my big brother, people are just doing anything to help you. And they're just rolling out, whether it's a farmer in Dingle giving you a place to park the caravan for the weekend and for the bank holiday, to the IRFU opening the door and actually officially launching this song next week at an amazing occasion. Like, I'd say we're doing high fives and cartwheels, Barry, when we got the news that it was going to be launched next Saturday at the Aviva.
Yeah.
It's just been amazing. And it's so inspiring. It just inspires you when you're doing something for a good worthy cause and in memory of Anthony. People, the real spirit in people come out and they just really go that extra mile to help. And it just makes it really, really, really worthwhile. And I definitely think Anthony's inspiring us and giving us a gentle guiding hand, because one of the challenges when we were coming up with the single was, how do you monetize a single? Charity singles don't make money nowadays because Spotify, isn't it 30 cents a song, Barry?
Oh, I wish it was 30 cents a song, Orla. It's a lot less than that. It's 0.0003 of a cent of a song or something like that. So,
the universe conspired. Whoever's up there helping us, the week before we launched, iDonate came up with this quick donate platform that we can have the song downloaded off. And it's just been amazing. And we had a year going, this is an amazing song, and Barry has done some amazing work on it. I admired you on the pitch, Barry, but I admire you all the more for this song, because it's just absolutely so brave, so beautiful, and a beautiful tribute to my brother. Thank you.
I agree. I think this song is class. It's been on repeat in my house for the last 24 hours, and in my car all evening yesterday. Even how do you? Big thing for me, Barry, is just sitting. First time I listened to it, I was like, how do you even come up with something like that in relation to, how do you find the emotion and the balance so right, but objectively be able to put something together that's so unbelievably well written, if that makes any sense?
Thank you very much. It was a hard one to write, Briggsy. It was when Orla asked me, which is 4 years ago, I think she asked me, so it's taken me a while to actually get around. And that's how challenging it is to write something for someone like that, because I know how much he meant to so many people and how much he meant to me. And you saw when Anthony passed away, the outpouring of grief was just something I'd never experienced from personally, to be honest. I've never been so rattled by something. And to watch the outpouring of grief as well. So I tried to write something for the first while about what Anthony meant to a lot of people. And that was pretty difficult. I didn't know how to do that. And then I just eventually realized that I had to write something for myself, what he meant to me. And that in itself is pretty difficult, because you have to sit with that emotion and that sadness for a long time. And but it's so powerful, and you have to accept it. You have to kind of let it in. And there are times when I could be down for weeks because I'd be trying to write that song, and it's so sad because of what he left with his two boys and his wonderful family. And then you don't want to inflict that sadness on people as well. So when you're listening to that last night, I feel there's a guilt that almost feels like I don't want to make people, you know, that sad. But I think speaking to Orla about it over the last while and how much inspiration she got from it. And then I spoke to Olive last week, and Olive's approach to this is just so mind-blowing. And she says whenever they hear anyone mention Anthony's name, whenever the two boys hear his name, they just run to the TV, or they want to read it, they want to see it, no matter what it is. They just want to celebrate how incredible he was. And what a way to approach, you know, such grief. And that's really inspiring for me. And that kind of makes it worthwhile. So I think I kind of tried to tap into that as well. And yeah, just write a personal account of what he meant to me and hope that it comes across and that other people can relate to it. So I'm glad to hear that, yeah, that you enjoyed it.
That's one of your first songs that I've really enjoyed. I'm only joking.
I know you're joking.
Barry, how conscious are you of, you say there, because, you know, sometimes if we feel down or upset or have some sort of trauma or adversity, a song can kick on the negative effects and kind of make it worse. You know, you avoid the song. But to get that balance right, and I think you have got that balance right, because it makes people emotional, but emotional in a positive way, I would imagine, for you, Orla, and for the family, that it's kind of honouring Anthony and what he stood for. He was a man of few words, let's be honest. At times, he just kind of grunted, and he was just shrugged the shoulders and was kind of so laid back. It's amazing, really. But going back to what I said about getting the emotion right and the lyrics right is incredible. So I think that's really important, and you've done that brilliantly.
Thanks. Well, yeah, thanks, Quinny. I appreciate that, and I completely agree with you. Like, Anthony, I've tried to describe him a few times to people where he, like, the last day I saw him was a Thursday before he died. We had breakfast together in Newell in the arena, and it was just the two of us. And I used to arrive in there after training in the gym, and I could be on my own most mornings, but sometimes Axe would be there, and I'd be delighted because we get to chat about our Monday night football, which we played out in Killaloe every Monday night. And he'd still maintain that he was the best player on the pitch on a Monday night.
But you were retired at this stage. You weren't a player.
Sorry.
Now,
so, no, yeah. I was retired. I was retired years. So
he was relaxed with you then.
Yeah. And we could be chatting away about the soccer and the Monday night and trying to avoid talking about anything too serious at the rugby. But he got up out of the chair to put his tray of food over on the countertop. And then he just walked out the door without saying goodbye to me. And I was just like, that is so hilarious. And that's the last time I saw him. But it's and one of the lyrics in the song actually is from a moment that I spoke about Anthony before. My first ever Irish camp was the Sunday after the Sale match in 2006. Eddie O'Sullivan invited me up, and I did 3 days of training. It was incredible to be involved. And Eddie picked the team on the Wednesday night to play the following weekend, and Axel wasn't picked in the 23, and he was pretty pissed off. And I unfortunately had to ask him for a lift home after
I know
training.
This story.
Because Fla had brought me up, and Fla was in the team, so I was sitting down having lunch with Axel, and I had to say, can I have a lift home? And he didn't answer me for about 20 seconds. He was just drinking his soup, but he looked up and he said, if you've got anything important to say, say it to me now, because I'm not talking to you on the way home. And that lyric is obviously in the chorus of the song, It's Important to Say, and I'll Say It to You Now, Alone You Stand. So I wanted to have some of that humour in there as well.
I was hoping if you see it, you believe it was a quote for him.
He was probably he was probably the same with G. Orla at home. Because I remember you could ask Axel, well, how are things? He'd say, grand. And there'd be silence then. I'd be saying, like, if you had nothing else to say. And he'd say, no, if I have something else to say, I'll say it. Everything is grand. He was kind of so laid back about stuff. But yeah, it's really funny. You recount some of the stories. One of the ones that, because people, he was so humorous and funny and loved the crack. And I don't know if you'll agree with this, or he kind of played, being a teammate, he would have played up to the fact that we kind of said, he says nothing. He just kind of grunts sometimes and then he laughs. And But he was a character. In our earlier days playing with Shannon, you know, we were going to Ballymena or somewhere, a long bus trip. We got on the bus in Thomond Park and we'd collect Axel in Bird Hill. And the movie The Usual Suspects was out a couple of weeks and everyone was talking about it. And we got a kind of a copy or a cassette tape of it, an illegal one anyway, from somebody. And we were playing it in the bus. So it went on in Thomond Park. And by the time we got to Bird Hill, it was 20 or 30 minutes. And there was silence in the bus. Axel jumps on in Bird Hill and walks down halfway, looks back. And so that's The Usual Suspects. Yeah, yeah. And everyone was like, shh, sit down quick. And he says, oh, your man Kaiser Soze is the fellow with the limp. So he loved the fact that he could ruin the movie for the whole lot of us. And then he just went to the back of the bus, put his two big feet up in the chair in front of him and listened to music himself. So there was a very funny side to him as well.
When you talk about the man of few words, my friend's nickname for him as a teenager was Mono. They'd ring up, hello, is Orna there? Can I speak to Orna? Can you tell her I called? You know, but it was interesting because all this beautiful stuff that's happening in his name, I got to reminisce. And actually, Anthony was really chatty when he was young, very, very chatty. And I always thought when he got into secondary school, that's when he got into the mono and maybe the testosterone. But he actually had meningitis twice in just sort of around 8 and 11. And I think that's what changed his personality. You know, he definitely became more quiet and within himself. You know, so, and that one of the whole points of Orla's Wild Ways was I was actually celebrating and very mindful how my life would have been very different had Anthony died then and not the great life that we shared with him for all those extra years, and what a blessing it was. And I'm very, very grateful that that actually happened, that we had those extra years, because we wouldn't be celebrating a wonderful, even though his life was short, he got a lot into all those years, you know.
Yeah, Orla, he probably went quiet and decided not to talk because his ears were deafened from playing with me and Eddie Halvey in the back row for Shannon for years. But I remember his great quote was, it was like a stereo constantly playing beside him when he played. And I'd say to him, Axel, you know, I have a lot of anxiety and I'm talking too much in the matches, the ref, the opposition, my own players, myself. Will you keep me calm today? And he said, yeah, you'll be grand. And that'd be it. He didn't get into it. And then I'd kind of look at him and he kind of developed this knack of just going, just let it go, Quinny, or relax or calm down. And it just had this effect on me. But I always admired how calm he was. And when we say he's a man of few words, he was a man who talked when he needed to talk. But he just, he was inspirational when he talks. But he kind of laughed and let all the other yappers do the yapping, and he'd just say very little unless he needed to. And, you know, he was a great captain. He was so vocal when he needed to be in the dressing rooms and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I felt that Axel loved me without ever telling me or showing me. Do you know what I mean? But I actually felt he absolutely loved me, and that's, what a way to be. I don't know how you manage to have that presence about you, but that's what I think. It's like an older brother thing where he'd be able to give you a kick up the hole, but you knew he always had your back, and you knew he was such a presence and such a leader that that's why he had such a profound effect on so many people, from the players like what he achieved in Shannon those early years and throughout the Munster, his Munster and Irish career, and his effect on the fans as well. You know, that whole journey, it'll never be done again. You know, that what was achieved in those years was just absolutely larger than life, really, when you think back to 2006 in Cardiff. And, you know, really, you could see the outpouring of grief when he passed away from the rugby world, how special that was. So, you know, it's what a unique human being. We're all so lucky to have as a friend and as a, I know, or as a brother. So yeah, look, I just love talking about him as well. I love these moments that we get to to have these chats about him and hearing these stories, it just makes it all the more special.
I think
I love the whole journey, because when you were talking about Alan, AIL days, we thought those days would never end. Like, we thought we were going to Europe when Europe started.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah,
you know, that's why Harlequins and all the other teams, it was like a bit of a shock when we didn't get, you know, to me. I thought, yay. But then it turned out to be much bigger. It was a genius move out of the IRFU to send the provinces. And it really, really, and that journey was like, I remember meeting you in the nightclubs, because many of us didn't travel to the away games. Like, Neat in Wales wasn't really exactly Paris, springtime. But we'd meet you and you'd come back after, and we'd meet you, and you know, the games were really hard and it was a really tough step up for you. And you really all as a team manned up, and it was such an amazing journey to actually be part of the supporters of it. Like, and where you came in at the end, Barry, like, in my mind, you're always a young fella, because you were one of the young fellas. You were the answer. We needed a 13, and you came along, and we had a brilliant 13. And then you broke yourself. You know? I love that Anthony's nickname for you was Bambi. Because I get that moment, because I remember being so upset, because, you know, you were just such a fabulous player, and Anthony would have really loved that in you and really enjoyed it as much as he enjoyed packing down in the back row with Quinny. You know, he really just had such joy and love for his teammates, his family. I remember when Zeebo and Murray came along, Anthony was over the under 20s. And, you know, he was just so excited. He was just so excited. He was talking about them as excited as he would about Tony and Dan. You know, he just lived and breathed for rugby. He loved the rugby family, and he was just so ordinary about it. I thought that was ordinary until I met CJ Stander. I was like, what do you mean you don't even watch the match? What do you mean you don't even watch other teams playing? Because I grew up with Anthony and Dad watching every match, getting up at all hours and watching reruns and replays. I thought that's what rugby players did.
I think from the outside looking in, the fact that, you know, Anthony was there, Quinny, with you in that amateur era, made that jump into professionalism, but seemed to be the heartbeat of that professional era that still held on to those amateur days, if that makes any sense. So even though he had bridged into that professional era with Munster, he was the cog that kind of kept everybody going in terms of that professionalism with that amateur mindset. Because at the time, I don't know, but from listening to you constantly tell me, I'm not sure that, you know, people, Munster players, any players really in general, had an idea of what professionalism took and where it needed to go in order to be, you know, the elite. And that there were still people trying to hang on to that amateur. I think the fact that Anthony, he was the epitome of what was good about the amateur game, but also was able to manage the balance of the professionalism. Is that fair to say?
That's true. And look, I was very lucky to join Shannon. Orla's dad, Brendan, coached me in the under 20s, and that was probably the first time, maybe a year or two before, I'd met Anthony, and we got to know each other. I knew he was a star schools player, and I'd heard about Anthony Foley, and, you know, he made his debut for Ireland, I think, at 20 or 21. I was at that game against England, and I remember thinking, God, I want to be like him. I want to be like Anthony Foley. I want to be able to play for Ireland. And I was in awe of his size and his strength. Like, he was as big when he was 18, 19 as he was when he was, you know, at the end of his career. He was just a giant. I was a scrawny, skinny kid in from Tipperary who was wild and athletic and could run with the ball. And I just found it always good to stay close around him, because he did the right thing. You talk about the professionalism, and that was something we had to learn. And we went through that amateur side where we played AIL, and we went out every Saturday night, and we were very successful. So I was kind of in a dream scenario of playing in a very successful team with big, strong forwards. Mick Galway was there as well. Brian Rigney played, you know, Kieran Maher, Mick Fitzgibbon, all these guys, Pat Murray, Jim Galvin. There were so many experienced guys that were phenomenal. And Anthony was like one of them. He was like this experienced head on really young shoulders. And it was the same in the under-20s. When Brendan coaches in the under-20s, we won every trophy. And I just track Anthony off the back of a scrum when he'd make line breaks and just pop the ball to me, and I'd finish things because he was so good. And he was really, people always said about Anthony that, you know, his reading of the game was exceptional, which it was, because he wasn't the quickest in the world, but he was always in the right place at the right time and could find space. And, you know, he was great fun off the field as well. And he trained hard and we had a few points and we had great fun. John Hayes was kind of someone, Anthony, John, myself and Mick Galway would have been four fellas who, it was just a given that we were always together on the Saturday nights after the matches. And we got very, very close together, and we played golf. We went away on holidays. We had great fun. But he was an old head and young shoulders.
He was ahead of his time, really.
Definitely. And he inspired people around us to try and be better and get fitter and stronger. The one thing I admired the most about him was his calmness. I was a bag of nerves most of the time, and he would just take it in his stride. And he never got overawed by playing against anyone, you know. And he helped lots of people. And Barry, you said it. In 2006, I remember feeling this, that of all the people, like, of course, we would have loved Golov to be able to lift a trophy because, you know, Arla, we were all so close. And Golov was kind of our spiritual leader. He was the one who minded us all. We would have loved to have seen Golov lift a trophy. But Anthony lifting it in 06 was a special part of that for some of us as well. Obviously for everybody, but, you know, he played in that first European game in 95, and to see him at the end of his career being able to lift the trophy was just unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
It gets you thinking about, you know, young lads these days watching what it takes to become, you know, not just a professional athlete or young girls, but to achieve what Anthony achieved. And you look back at how he did it and what artists talking about as a kid growing up watching as much rugby as he did, being so enthralled in it. And then, like, he was a Clare hurler. He played minor. He played for Clare, played football, played soccer. Wasn't the greatest soccer player.
He really fancied himself as a soccer player.
With him as well.
Yeah, Eric Cantona. He thought he was a Cantona, roaming striker. And adamant to keep doing the back heels and all that. But, like, and then to go on and play, you know, play for Munchens, win a Junior Cup at Munchens. We were the next team in Munchens to win a Junior Cup. Axel came in and presented us with our medals. I remember at 15, I just remember he had this unbelievable bird with him who ended up being Olive, his wife, later years. But at the time we were like 15, we're like, oh my God, Anthony Foley's got this gorgeous girl. I still slag Olive about that now. But the amount of rugby he played, even up to that point, but then to go on and win four AAs with Shannon, God knows how many, wants the senior cups. And that's enough for anyone's career. But then to go on and play, the most capped number 8 for Ireland at one point, and to have been to 2 Heineken Cup finals and won a few Celtic leagues. I mean, he achieved so much. He really, the amount of games he actually played, the amount of hours that he put in, that's why you don't just are born with that calmness or that ability to know where to be at the right time. It's because you put so much effort and you're so passionate about what you do that you get to that level. I think that's why Munster were so successful for those years, is because you guys like that, and then fellas like yourself, Quinny and Raj and Paulie and everyone that kind of came afterwards. But, you know, he paved the way.
Yeah, it was enjoyable though, Barry. It was really good because, and look, the Munster team nowadays, and even the team that Anthony coached, that's why I was kind of like, oh God, why did Anthony have to be the coach when I criticised? It's like two fellas having a chat, and I opened up on my frustrations, and, you know, Anthony was... It was a shame because he loved the game so much and was passionate about the game, and it was at that period the team was in major transition, but, you know, he was an integral part of all our success and what we achieved. And, you know, probably didn't even though he didn't enjoy it, he was calm about things. And, you know, I remember one time he just, he had an ability to bring people together and just kind of keep things very simple. And he always wanted to do the simple things well. And that, and that's what he did with us. And that's what he did with us as a team. And it was probably just unfortunate that he didn't get a chance to kind of fulfill that dream and win something with Munster, I would think.
He did fulfill his dream. Like, I grew up with Anthony reading Roy of the Rovers. That was his magazine, you know, he loved it. And he got to be Roy of the Rover. He got to wear the red. He got to win the cups. And then he got to be poacher turned gamekeeper. Because as you know, all being players, how critical we can all be of coaches and management, you know, when you're the loved ones or you're the player. And then Anthony actually got to step up and actually experience actually the level that's involved at that level. And by the time he got there, there was so much more involved, like having to go and try and get people to sign contracts and stuff that, you know, stuff I wouldn't have even thought was part of coaching. I think Rod did a great piece on it last week in the Examiner about the stresses at that level. And, you know, it's just that step up in the professional world, especially as I think, is it Niall O'Donovan says, we've created a bear, now we've to feed it. You know, with Munster success, you know, there was, when you were winning and you were rising up through Europe, there was no expectation.
No.
For you to go out and do your best. Whereas when, by the time Anthony got there, if you weren't qualifying, you know, into the semis and the quarters, you know, you weren't successful that season. You know, people were a bit more hungrier and had higher expectations. And it's probably a lesson for life, you know, the less expectations we have of ourselves, of others, and just do, as Anthony would say, do the simple things and do them right and just do little step. So, like,
I saw
the pressure he was under, but I didn't actually fear for him because he was my big brother. He could do anything. I actually believed in my head that, you know, he would turn it around and I could see him coaching Ireland in the future. You know, I really believed in my big brother, and it just shows I grew up following him and supporting him, and it was a pleasure. And it shows how little I probably knew about number eight position for all those years of following, watching that. When he actually retired and I was watching Munster and I was watching Ireland, I was like, why is the number eight not taking the kickoff? Because Anthony was always there under every ball. So I thought that was his role, because very rarely anyone else got it. So when it wasn't happening, I was like, what's going on?
I'm actually just going to take that away with me, Orla, in terms of the expectation. Quinny and I speak about it a lot on this podcast, about how difficult it is to win things these days, and that just because there's an expectation or an understanding that we should be winning, that it's actually quite a really hard thing to do. And that maybe as Munster supporters and that's what we are now. We're all supporters now, that we've just got to be able to probably, as you say, accept the simple things and not to have this huge expectation that we should be winning cups and we should be winning things. So I think that you just, like, that for me is the whole line of it. I think this today has been totally worth it. Just for the people that do listen in, obviously the song is such a huge part, but can you just give us a small snippet on, like, the charities and the actual, the journey that you've gone in Orla's Wild Ways, which I absolutely love the name of. Haven't been in many nightclubs. Haven't been in many nightclubs with you before.
Anthony always loved my Wild Ways.
Thanks. But yeah, if you could just tell us, like, what you've done so far, and then I think if we can reiterate the charities as well, I think it'd be brilliant for people listening.
Well, I cycled 3,000 kilometres of the Wild Atlantic Way, which, for those that don't know, it's the coastline of the West Coast, and it's absolutely spectacular. I wouldn't, you know, you don't have to get on a car, or sorry, you don't have to get on a bike. You can get in a car or a motorbike and, you know, just do it. I cycled it with the support of a friend, and we had a caravan. So we moved along the Wild Atlantic Ways, and people were so amazing and so generous. And over €10,000 have been raised for the three wonderful causes. CRY, who screened for sudden adult death, which Anthony died of. And they provide support services for families for bereavement, and they're a wonderful charity. And Carrie, who provides free counselling for sexually abused children and their family, and their work is incredible. And then Midwest Cancer Foundation, whom Anthony was on the board of, and he was their ambassador and very close to our heart, and they do wonderful work. They provide free holistic therapies and free counselling for oncology patients in the Midwest. And some of my friends have had to avail of their services. So they're all very, very worthy causes. And it's an honour to be able to help create awareness about what they did. Because after Anthony died, we didn't know where to go, what to do. You know, we had to investigate and find out, you know, were we at risk? And CRY were just amazing. You know, the screening of all of us to put our minds at ease. But our, you know, going forward, it was great. And then even though, you know, I'm perfectly healthy, they're keeping an eye on us. So every few years, I still have to go back in and they still keep an eye on you. And it just feels like you're part of, you know, the way we're a part of the rugby family. It feels like when you're in the CRY, you're part of the family and they mind you. It's they're just fabulous. And a friend of mine is the general manager of CARI. So I am...
Brilliant.
I know their amazing work and I know what they're doing and what they're aiming for. So it's fantastic. It's a pity we need a charity like that, but we have to support them and move forward and do what we can.
I think that's like three unbelievable charities that probably really close to home as well in terms of where we are in the vicinity. I think from our point of view, Cooney and I's point of view in relation to this podcast, we're definitely going to be trumping out the fact that we want people to download that song. Obviously the song is unbelievable, but there's also another end to it as well. So in memory of Anthony, which is class, Barry, but also on the back of that, we get to support three amazing charities that probably could do with the help post-COVID.
Yeah. I think, sorry, Orla, go for it.
Barry, you might forgive me for this, but I've been dreaming again.
Love your dreams. Go for it.
What do we do next? I love your song so much. I'd love it to be an anthem for Munster. I'd love it. At a Munster home game with the Munster choir singing the refrain, a bit like, remember, There Is an Isle?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Barry gets to be Frankie and the Munster choir and all the supporters get to sing the refrain. It came to me last night, I'd love it. I just think, and it's for me, Thomond Park is my church, you know, Lansdowne Road's my cathedral. And I could, to have something like this there and to, you know, on Saturday for it to be launched in my cathedral, and I'll really feel Anthony's spirit around us there, because I always do when I go to Thomond Park or Lansdowne Road, oh, the Viva. And it's just magic, and you've created something magic, and it's great to be part of something magic. And thanks Niamh and Quinny for having us on to talk about it and help get the word about this beautiful song and downloading it.
I think that's important, Orla. And obviously we want to remember Anthony in a positive way. There's so many stories we could tell, but this is really important. You know, there's so many lovely moments over the years. You think Chicago, the figure of eight, the Maoris given the jersey, Connacht's given a jersey a few weeks ago, different tributes. The Sky Sports tribute was sensational. I watched that again recently. My interview with Anthony when he was coach for Sky, when I'm walking down the canal bank in Limerick at the back of UL, and I say, I can't believe I'm here interviewing you as head coach of Munster. And he's there. His response was, I can't believe you're here interviewing me at all. Just kind of put me back in my box, really. It was just, it's just so many funny stories, but we miss him. And, you know, I carried a little bit of tinge and guilt with me always, but I still have the text message that I look at. And he was just, you know, like I say, Anthony was just a good fella who loved his rugby and just got on with things and was calm. And, you know, if something went wrong or there was drama, he just kind of shrugged the shoulders and said, well, how can we fix it and how do we move forward? Himself and John Hayes, I'll finish with this story anyway, and then I'll leave the last word to you, Barry. John Hayes and himself called into my family home in Limerick Junction one day, and we were going to Kilkenny to stay overnight with Golov on a Saturday night. I think it was during the summer, and my brother, myself and my dad, there was a row going on anyway, and there was skin and hair flying in the kitchen. Anyway, the car pulled into the yard and there was tables and chairs being turned upside down. My father was trying to referee. It was between myself and my brother, and the kitchen was absolutely destroyed with tables and chairs turned upside down. We were fighting full on. And the boys are in the yard and they're just outside the car and they're listening to all this. And my mother came out and said, oh, we're so sorry, lads, there's a row going on. And the two boys just kind of started, shrugged the shoulders and started laughing. And I remember my brother went away, the place was cleaned up, and the boys came in and just had tea. And it was like, we were mortified and embarrassed. And Axel was just like, for what? Like, his eyes, nothing happened. Like, and it was just, I just remember it was so funny, his reaction, that I think of it sometimes that like shit happens sometimes. And he just always had an ability to go, well, sure, whatever, just move on. And that's it. So I think it's really special. And Barry, look, I'm sure Olive and all the family and Orla and Rosie and Brendan and Sheila and the grandkids and they're all really proud of what you're doing. So I think it's really special. And for me as a former teammate and all our teammates, this is lovely. It's a lovely thing to do. So well done. You've done brilliant with the band. I'm not sure Axel would even give you a compliment with Hermitage Green, the way you've gone and the way you've had success over the years. He'd probably tell you you're shit. Like, anyway, deep down, he'd be listening to you all the time. But I think it's really special, and well done for doing what you've done. It's a lovely thing.
Thanks very much. Thanks, Quinny. Look, it's honestly, it's the least I could have done for someone who inspired me from a young age, that I feel I wouldn't have, you know, I went on such a journey myself that I owe so much of that to Axel, that this is the least I could do. And I'm very grateful for you guys to giving this kind of support. And yeah, hopefully everyone that's tuning out, anyone that's at the in Lansdowne Road on Saturday, keep an eye out for it. There'll be a little link in the match program with a QR code that you can download the song and donate. So thanks to Orla, you're a legend. And
and just to tell people, it's, you can go to idonate.ie/swift/alone-you-stand, and you can donate and download the song there. So Orla and Barry, we'd love to keep chatting. There's loads of stuff, loads of stories we keep telling. Great days and great memories. And obviously, we'll never forget, Anthony, what happened was incredibly painful for everybody, particularly the family. And Dan and Tony are doing really well, and Oisin, your nephews, Orla, are doing brilliant as well. So that's, Anthony loved that the boys are doing well too.
And my niece.
And your niece, of course.
Amazing.
You can give them all a plug there if you want. But look, thanks, Orla and Barry, thank you so much for joining us. And it was really special.
Thanks guys.
Okay, Niamh, that was brilliant to chat to Orla and to Barry there about the song on Saturday at halftime in the All Blacks game. It's a tricky game. The performance is really good against Japan. Lots of people asking me that I Leinster against Japan last week. And I don't take any offence to that, because I always think the best team is the team that's picked, unless there's really, really obvious 50-50 decisions here. But it was two Munster guys, Andrew Conway and Ty Byrne, started in the team. People saying they came from the Leinster Academy, which they did. It's a bit disappointing in a sense, but we, as I said, I don't take any offence to it. But we had Peter O'Mahony coming off the bench, Conor Murray coming off the bench, Keith Earls. Will we see any of them starting at the weekend, or will there be any changes?
Yeah, look, I think obviously in the back of that performance, it's really difficult. I think there was definitely a couple of question marks over, you know, probably James Lowe and Gibson Park maybe before the Japanese game, but they both performed exceptionally well, albeit, you know, we still got to see James Lowe in defence. So it's whether, you know, that Andy Farrell decides to stick with what he, you know, on the back of last weekend, which was an unbelievable performance, Quinny. Like, I loved everything about that performance. So do you stick with that, or do you go with, say, an O'Mahony type player who's going to come in and beat the dog around the park that can disrupt the Kiwis' breakdown and their lineout? And do you stick with coming with somebody like Conor Murray, obviously, in terms of his ability to control the game and his defensive efforts? And then, say, Keith Earls, you know, we all know what he can do defensively and his ability to read the game. I think it's going to be very difficult for any of those players to be dropped after last weekend. I thought it was an exceptional performance.
Yeah, we forgot Joey Carberry, he came on as well. Yeah. So four Munster players off the bench. But look, it is going to be a difficult game. It's one that I think they can take a lot of confidence and momentum out of the Japanese game. But who knows? We could be, you know, it's a little bit unknown. The All Blacks have played a lot of games and they've probably more games under their belt, but certainly a lot of confidence can be taken for that. Just finally, Paul O'Connell's influence. Well, he's a Munster man and I think you can see parts of his influence in the game. And to be fair, Mike Catt, the attack was exceptional, but the breakdown on Paul O'Connell's influence, he won't be happy they lost four lineouts in the second half. That's something they can't do this week.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that really astute appointment from Andy Farrell, Dave News 4, to be fair, because I think under Joe Schmidt, everything was about detail and everything. You know, they lived off the fact that they, you know, that the ball was going to be so clean and quick. I think they kind of went a little bit away from that before Paulie came in. And he's exceptional in terms of his detail. I'd actually just love to go in and shadow him for a day or two to see how he operates, because look, we all know what a brilliant rugby player he was in terms of his ability on the field and his leadership, but sometimes it can be really hard to translate that across communication to players. He obviously seems to be really comfortable with that because they're
And the players are saying it themselves. This we might get accused of being biased sometimes here on this podcast, but the players are saying that themselves, which is great. And I think, look, having been in a dressing room for so long, it's different being a coach, Paul's presence alone. And look, hopefully he's added in and they're working well together and that we can see some competitive performances. And we need him to be competitive this week. If we don't win, we need to be thereabouts. That'd be brilliant. We've got to leave it there. That's it all from us on the Red 78 this week. Don't forget to get in touch with your thoughts on all things Munster throughout the week. And we'll be sure to get them on next week's podcast. You can tweet us at the Rugby Channel 15 or search for the Rugby Channel on YouTube and leave a comment. Make sure you subscribe to the Red 78 wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll chat to you next week. Thanks again, Niamh. That was really interesting today. And I look forward to chatting to you next week.
Thanks, Quinny.
The Munster Rugby Podcast. Red 78 with Alan Quinlan and Niamh Briggs. Nobody knows Munster Rugby better.